On the far side, that's when they'll be testing the communication system by connecting to the deep space network to see if it all works. The three Americans and one Canadian astronaut will do a lunar flyby on the far side of the moon. I'm Janine Herbst, and you're listening to NPR News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, investing in creative thinkers and problem solvers who help people, communities, and the planet flourish. More information is available at Hewlett.org.
Welcome to The Conversation on WVIK. It's a weekly celebration of local radio the way it's meant to be brewed. And this week, my guest is Rachel Loomis from Living Lands and Waters. I'm Kai Swanson. I hope you'll stick around for this week's Conversation on WVIK. Okay, full disclosure, right off the get-go, Rachel, you and I are just meeting, really, for the first time, but you have to understand, I am a full-on fanboy of Chad Pragracki and Living Lands and Waters, and it's a thrill to have you here.
I'm excited to be here. I'm a fangirl, so I feel like we're going to kick this thing off perfectly.
We're going to have a great time. Yeah. And we're going to talk about one of the most, I think, intriguing stories of our community is that it sort of was the midwife to this incredible national organization. And we'll get to all that in just a minute. But like I said, this is the first time we've had a chance to meet, and you're going to learn I'm just incurably nosy. So the first thing is, where did you grow up?
Yeah, so I'm a Wisconsin girl. I grew up in the Milwaukee area.
And you pronounced it correctly, right?
Yeah, there we go. And I always love to say I love the Green Bay Packers, so I'm sorry to those folks out there. Go Pack, go. love to have a good little brew every once in a while, brats, all that good stuff. But
maybe an old-fashioned.
Old-fashioned, yeah, for okay. Sure, yeah. But yeah, grew up in Wisconsin.
Now, where near Milwaukee did you grow up?
Yeah, so Racine County in a little town called Union Grove. It's like about 4,000 people. And yeah, just
I have to ask. Yeah. Because I know how to pronounce Oconomowoc and Okauchee because a cousin taught there for many years.
Okay, yep, yeah, I know. It's funny. There's always those people that are like, how the heck do you say this? And I'm like, just give it a twist. You might win some, you might lose some, but yeah, Wisconsin. I love Wisconsin, but it's cool to be here in the Quad Cities as well.
Well, okay, let's feed a stereotype then for just a second. But people who grow up in Wisconsin, especially in that part of the state, tend to be outdoors a lot more than other Americans. Was that your experience? Did you spend a lot of time outdoors?
Yeah, I did. I grew up on 4 acres with my parents' house and just had little creek running through the backyard and went to summer camps when I was little. So just the day before social media, so you're exploring outside a whole lot and going to local state parks or traveling and camping. So yeah, the outdoors has always been a part of my life for sure.
So did that inform some of the choices you made? You know, we get to that magical time in high school where we get to start picking electives and that's kind of a precursor to going off to college. Was that starting to shape you then, or this interest in science and the environment and sustainability, all that stuff?
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. When I was in high school, you know, I met with my advisor maybe once, maybe twice a year. And all right, what do you want to be when you grow up? And that's a loaded question for anybody, right? I'm like still trying to figure it out at 34. And, right? And you know, at that time and maybe this is a reflection of how I was as a student, but my advisor was like, all right, you can either be a nurse, you could be a teacher, or you could be an admin. And I'm like, gosh, that's all the choices I had. And I knew I wanted to work with students, young adolescents. And so I was like, I'm going to go be a teacher. And I went to college for a year thinking I was going to go in the formal education route, and then was quite intimidated by like this curriculum writing and being in this typical four-wall classroom for the rest of my life. and I wasn't really jiving with it. So I ended up dropping out of school, went and did some other stuff for a few years. I actually worked at a real estate office for a few years, and I loved it, right? Because you're like showing people like this next chapter of their life, whether they're going into a house to start a family or maybe they're retiring because they're empty nesters, and really loved that, loved that part. But I also kind of miss working in the outdoors and miss working with students. So went back to school, thank gosh for Google, and just found UW Stevens Point for the College of Natural Resources. And so went back there as a non-traditional student. Yeah. And went for environmental education. Said, hey, I still want to be a teacher. I just want to be a teacher in the outdoors. I want to teach at national parks or nature centers or nonprofit organizations. And so, yeah, I wow. went back to school and kind of started pursuing that. And I, yeah, have a passion for that for sure. So left it, but came back in an organic way, which meant a lot to me for sure.
I think I'm seeing something coming into focus already. The way you talked about real estate, you're a storyteller.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
I mean, that's
that.
What you're doing, right? That seems yeah. to be what caught your attention
yeah.
was sharing stories. And,
yeah.
and you took something like real estate and you just immediately told it, it's about helping people find their story.
Yeah, for
so
sure.
Cool.
Yeah, it's, you know, sometimes as you get older, you start reflecting on what you're good at or what you're interested in, and you hopefully find that route, and still trying to figure it out. But yeah, storytelling is, gosh, I mean, your job too, right? But yeah, it's a glorious thing to be able to talk about.
Yeah. And then Stevens Point, man, what a great place to find, you know, internships and external learning that you can do while you're preparing. Did you get to explore some of the amazing state and national forests and parks and all that kind of thing up there? Because my mother was a Youper.
Okay, good.
Yeah, yeah.
Good.
So a lot of my growing up was in Delta County, Escanaba, and that area around in there. So,
yeah.
But did you get to do a lot of like hands-on stuff around
yeah,
there?
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to brag about College of Natural Resources at UW Stevens Point.
Brag on.
So yeah, whether you are in the fisheries department, you're going into soils, water, environmental education like me, you are required to take courses in all those fields because obviously natural resources all blend together, right? Mm-hmm. So you got to interconnect them all. And so field work in central Wisconsin, just taking courses up near Lake Superior, which is wonderful. But yeah, just Wisconsin, I mean, an abundance of resources and good people doing all those good things up there and teaching us about it. So it was a wonderful experience. And I'm so glad that I went back to a four-year college to pursue that.
Absolutely. So speaking of Lake Superior, did your studies ever take you out to Isle Royale?
Oh, yes, I've been there. I've been backpacking there.
Please tell me. That's on my bucket list.
Oh, gosh, yeah. So I got to get back there. I think I backpacked there in 2017, and it was only a three-nighter, but departed from Copper Harbor, Michigan,
mm-hmm.
and you take like a 3-4 hour little boat ride over to Isle Royale. And you check in with the National Park Ranger and you give them their route, and then you get to go out in the wilderness and they say, see you back whenever you're planning to return. So it was beautiful. I mean, Lake Superior, I haven't been many places in the world. There's so much to explore right here within the U.S., but I will say Lake Superior is like my favorite place in the whole world.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful place. So yeah, Isle Royale, gosh, if you haven't been and you're into backpacking or artwork,
now, did you
or
go
fishing,
with a group?
I went with a friend.
I was going to say, because you got wolves, you
yeah,
got bears.
Yeah, yeah. And National Park, I think just several years ago, they're reintroducing wolves back mm-hmm. to Isle Royale. So mm-hmm. very similar to Yellowstone. But trying to get that moose population down, I think it was, you know, only like 5 wolf population compared to 1,200 moose. So it's kind of just wild to think about. So yeah, didn't see any wolf. We heard a moose while we were up there, had to stand behind a tree just in case it was heading towards us, which it felt in my heart like it was. I felt like I heard the pounding of the hooves on the trail nearby, but never saw one. But I got to get on back. I mean, gosh, what a beautiful place. So, yeah.
Yeah, Lake I hope Superior. To get there someday. I did some kayaking out of Copper Harbor, and it's the funny thing is, the minute you leave the harbor and you're in the lake proper, the temperature inside your boat drops 20 degrees.
Yeah.
Because the water is just
so wild.
Cold.
It's on my, since 2016, I've been up to Lake Superior every year with the exception of 2022. And it's on my bucket list for the rest of my life to get up there at least once a year to immerse my body into it. Because it's just, it's a cold plunge, right? Like you've never
you're never gonna find
before. Even in September, it's like the water's still so freezing. It's turquoise water up there. It's like you're in Jamaica or something, you know. So.
In July, it's freezing. So because that's when I usually get up around that part of the world. All right, so we're going to have to start waxing poetic, and you already have. But so we've sung the praises of lakes, but something about rivers is very, very different. And this one managed to draw you here. Tell us the story of how you came to be in this community, came to be part of Living Lands and Waters.
Yeah, I appreciate that because growing up in Wisconsin, you're just naturally kind of a lake person, right? So many lakes up in Wisconsin and Michigan and Minnesota. But on my last spring break at UW-Stevens Point, I had this experience where we were supposed to have like this regional conference on our campus. And at the time, I was part of a student-run organization in a leadership position. And so my professors, if they listen to this, they'll get a kick out of it. But they were like, all right, Rachel, you're going to be leading tours and helping facilitate and doing some of these sessions. And I'm like, okay. And, you know, I'm kind of just itching to graduate and I want to do this, but wasn't super pumped about it. And then I get on like my campus announcements where I'm seeing travel to Memphis on your last spring break to go clean up garbage for several days. I'm like, man, this just sounds so much more fun than being on campus on my last spring break, right? And so I'm looking into it and I apply, even though I know in the back pocket I'm supposed to be on campus and I'm just like, well, maybe if I apply and don't get in, that's just the universe talking to me, right? Yeah. So I apply and I get accepted. Like there's still a spot left. And so I go to like the enrollment meeting and there's, you know, 13 other pointers, UWSB pointers. Mm-hmm. And I know nobody. And they're like, all right, you're going to be going to Memphis in a few weeks. So I go back to my professors and I'm like, I think I'm going to do this. Do you guys mind? And they kind of look at me and they're like, you know, you're graduating in a few months here. You don't have a job yet. Are you sure? And I'm like, I think I just got to do this. So in March 2019, traveled down to Memphis, Tennessee to go work side by side with these modern day river rats cleaning up McKellar Lake and just was pumped about doing that. And so then that's kind of where my Living Lands and Waters story started.
Well, and that seems like what a great adventure that is.
Yeah.
And Memphis, what a great town.
Oh, so good.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah. So we'll come back to this, the poetry of rivers in a minute, but now we better talk about Living Lands and Waters. And I mean, I remember actually getting to write a story about Chad going back about 20 years or so, and because he came and he spoke at a class at Augustana, and he was just getting started, right? Just started to get. I think he had just secured the first sponsorship from like Alcoa to help him get a better boat, right?
Yeah,
it was like that. And then in 2013, fast forward for a little bit, we got to host something called the Order of Lincoln Investiture Ceremony. So not only have I seen him without a hat, I saw him wearing a tuxedo, right? I don't know if you've seen any of those pictures, but that was so cool. And we honored him and some other amazing people from our community. And then it was like the floodgates opened. He gets the CNN Hero of the Year Award, the Jefferson Award, all these other things like this. But he's always just been Chad.
Yeah.
Right? So tell us your story when you're telling people, I work for a place called Living Lands and Waters, and they say, huh? Mm-hmm. How do you tell them about the organization?
Yeah, it's a pretty easy story to tell because it's so dang inspiring, right? But even just this past week, and I'm sure we'll be getting into a little bit more, but had a workshop with some young adolescents from the community, and they're coming on to the floating classroom barge that I teach on, and I get to show them and inspire them about how Chad started this whole thing, and obviously, hopefully that relates to them and inspires them, but it is so funny seeing these kids, these young adolescents look at these photos of Chad from 30 years ago, and he has these jean overalls on with a, you know, bandana in his hair, and hey, this guy just had a different perspective of the river, and like you said, several years later, then he has a tux on with a USA tie and has to be all, you know, formal, but still so humble in what he's sharing and what he's doing. And so, yeah, it's just, it's really inspiring to say to these students, like, hey, just like Chad, you might not feel like you can change the world, but you can change your world, right? And that's exactly what Chad did 30 years ago, and he's still doing that. And it's an easy story to share to help inspire people to make a difference in their life in whatever they want to do, whether it is cleaning up garbage like Chad and Living Lands and Waters and our crew with volunteers, sponsors, students, or making a difference amongst their family, their workplace, their sports team, right? And so it's a fun way to explore and just say, how does this really inspire you to think about your everyday life? You can do it. You gotta be motivated and determined that you can do it yourself.
And I love the youth focus that's going on right now. We're going to get to that in a minute, but correct me if I'm wrong. It started when, you know, Chad was just out commercial fishing and he was going down to get up mussels and that kind of thing. And he started to realize there's so much junk down here. And of course, you don't see anything. You go down and you're feeling around and you're doing that kind of work. And that really impressed him in his teens, that something's got to be done here. So it just started with, you know what, I'm going to take the afternoon off from getting the mussels. I'm going to get this washing machine out of here, you know. And then it got bigger and bigger and bigger, and the equipment got bigger and bigger, and the scope got bigger. So he starts on the Mississippi, right around Hampton, East Moline, all that kind of stuff. Tell us about the rivers that the organization now takes care of.
Yeah, great question. Yeah, it's expanded so much over time in our operations, our crew, the amount of volunteers, the amount of support, and then, you know, the amount of garbage that we're getting. I mean, it started with Chad with one John boat, one person. Mm-hmm. Now we have maybe about 13 people on our crew, and we're traveling all over the country on barges and John boats, right? And so we've been everywhere from, you know, the Ohio River, the Tennessee, up in the Wisconsin, Illinois River, of course. But I think at this point, maybe we've worked on 32 different U.S. rivers, and we've cleaned up over 14 million pounds since Chad, of course, started it nearly 30 years ago. So we're traveling. You know, Chad is my boss, but I always say the garbage is my boss a little bit more, because we're going where the garbage takes us, and we're trying to educate people, community members, and students along the way. So it's phenomenal.
Well, I thought one of the genius things he did early on is, I think it was only the second or third river, but he started to pay attention to the Potomac.
Potomac, yep.
Right by Washington, D.C. Yep. And that's what got his name and the organization's aura in front of a lot of really powerful people. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was kind of an inflection point for the organization. Are you still doing things on the Potomac?
I don't think we've been there in quite some time. We're doing a whole lot of work on the Ohio right now. That's where job security is for sure. So I don't think we've been on the Potomac for quite some time. And maybe we'll get back there. You never know.
It's just, and it's a pretty good story. People got aware and they started to pay a little closer attention.
Yeah.
And now I tell people, if you got like an extra 3 hours in DC, go to Teddy Roosevelt Island and the wetlands all the way around that. I mean, it is a success story, but I just thought organizationally, it's like, dude, go to the river whose banks are the most power laden of anything you're ever going to go to. But also focusing on St. Louis, I think you got some great corporate sponsorship there. Yeah. Lots of corporate partners from there. And the whole idea of cleaning up morphs into, I mean, really changing lives.
Yeah.
And so I want to talk about the timeliness of this, and we'll come back to other things later. But so the classrooms here, now we're talking on the first Saturday in April, and it's going to be here for a little bit, right? But it's going to take off and go do its work elsewhere.
Yeah. So just to be clear, so we have a whole bunch of barges, right?
Okay.
And so our garbage barges, along with our house barge that has our room and board for our crew, as well as a classroom that we've had for, you know, nearly 20 years. That's separate. So that's down in Memphis, Tennessee right now. I think it's working its way up to Paducah. That primarily stays on the Ohio River with the garbage. That's where the garbage is. Mm-hmm. There's, yes, garbage up here, but just not quite as much, and it's flowing downriver, right? So 3 years ago, Chad, he wanted to kind of keep things I guess, kind of keep everybody on their toes a little bit. So we added a new classroom barge to our fleet. And our newest classroom barge is called the Mississippi River Institute. And that classroom barge, we just got done kind of, you know, putting everything together, remodeling it in spring 2024. And so since then, it's traveled every 6 months to a new location. And fall 2024, we were in St. Louis. Winter 2025, we were in Memphis, Tennessee. And then fall 2025, we were just up in St. Paul, Minnesota. And so now we're here in the Quad Cities. And so that's our newest floating classroom barge, and it's an educational barge. And so, yeah, Mississippi River Institute. You want me to dive into what that's all about?
Or dive is public radio.
Yeah.
We don't rush. Yeah. We dive. Please, Rachel, dive.
Yeah. No, so life has been good. You know, while our crew is working hard on doing other projects like river cleanups, the environmental education, doing cleanups with students on that house barge. We're doing the Million Trees Project. I mean, we got so much going on, right?
Yeah. We got to get to that later on, too. Yeah. But the reason I say it, because it's a mobile classroom.
Yeah, yeah.
When it's here, I mean, it's great that you guys will share it with people and get, like, you just describe the program you did last weekend. You were just referencing that. Where did those kids come from? How did they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell us everything.
Yeah. So we open up the classroom to local high school, 11th, 12th graders, and college students, so maybe first, second year students. Mm-hmm. And again, we're throwing a little bit of a twist on this program. So we're still obviously talking about the Mississippi River and rivers in general for that ecological value. 20 million people get their drinking water from it. You know, we were talking about mussels before. 15 gallons of water are filtered by one mussel every single day. There's birds, there's turtles. We're fishing on it. We're eating that fish. Like, ecological value, right? However, this Mississippi River Institute floating classroom barge, now we're looking at it from the economic value. So there's over 1.3 million jobs on the Mississippi River alone. Everything from trades and transportation, conservation, tourism, hospitality, right? And that's what we get to promote to these students that come out. So local students are attending a one-day workshop, and they get to learn about all the possibilities and opportunities and experiences that are on the river through our workshop.
And all of this is happening right here in our community, but you're going to be taking off, right? Where will the barge spend the latter part of the summer?
St. Louis.
We're and going when does it down. Leave?
I think it's like the end of June.
I knew I was going to try to get you on before then. Right?
Yep.
So if I wanted to take advantage of a program, but I'm not in a school, is there a way that you reach out to other kinds of groups or individuals, that kind of thing?
Yeah. So the workshops are filled up, but it's always really cool to get those teachers, whether you're a welding teacher, agriculture teacher, maybe a general career exploration, AP Environmental Science, just go on to the MississippiRiverInstitute.org website, submit an inquiry on there and get in contact with me. But then other groups in the community, we're inviting, you know, Rotary Clubs, nature centers.
And I got a story about that too in just a minute. But right now I'm going to tell everybody that my guest is Rachel Loomis from Living Lands and Waters. We're having a ball. Stick with us on WVIK's The Conversation. More of this conversation when we return in just a moment.
Support for WVIK comes from Kathleen Collins Counseling, presenting a workshop on the body's energy centers, or chakras, Saturday, April 25th from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. The workshop focuses on understanding and working with energy to support health and emotional well-being. Registration at KathleenCollinsCounseling.com.
Find out what's going on this weekend with What's Happening QC, your source for local events and fun in the Quad Cities, made possible by Seifert Building Supplies. Fridays at 2:01 p.m. on WVIK News, and you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. What's Happening QC?
I'm Nancy Allen, and WVIK has been my NPR station since my son Andy Green was in fifth grade, and he insisted that I give up listening to rock and roll and listen to the news.
And thanks for joining us. We're back now with our conversation with Rachel Loomis from Living Lands and Waters, just on the WVIK Conversation, because, oh man, we love storytellers. And Rachel, you are a very eloquent one. We were talking about, you made reference to this million trees thing, and we won't spend a ton of time with that, but what I think is very impressive is people who live in the Quad Cities, they are driving past trees planted by Living Lands and Waters, or supplied by Living Lands and Waters, and then volunteer groups do the planting. But what can you tell us about the Million Trees Initiative?
Yeah, so this program has been going on since 2007. We got a million trees planted throughout the country, primarily the east of the mighty Mississippi River. I think that was 2014. 2024 is when we hit 2 million, but what we're doing is we typically get 4 native oak species, and I think this year we got burr, red, swamp white, and pecan. And so what we're doing is we're getting these trees from state nurseries, and we're helping distribute those throughout the country to people that need them, and just helping their environment a little bit better with these native tree species.
So, I mean, I'm just going to put in a plug here, because with my work in the Forest Preserve Commission, Living Lands and Waters is this tremendous partner. So we got this beautiful thing called the Amoa Forest Preserve, and Chad was instrumental in advocating for that creation of that particular facility. And because most of the land around here got timbered at least once, and then there wasn't a lot of intentional forestry going on. So white oaks, they do great. Mm-hmm. They've got a lot of friends. I love to say it in Latin, Quercus alba, right? So
yes,
that's my favorite. Red oaks are wonderful, and burr oaks, but they need a little help. So I'm grateful that Living Lands and Waters chose these. And did you say swamp oak too? I mean, that's coming.
White swamp oak.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, and pecan. I mean, mm-hmm. Of course, the second you say that, all I think about is pie. But, to bring these species back is very important for the resilience of our ecosystem. So as you're driving along, let's say Illinois Route 84, and you're almost to the footprint of Living Lands and Waters near Rapid City, Hampton, if you look around, you're going to see trees that were made possible. Their plantings were made possible by Living Lands and Waters. So on behalf of everybody who breathes oxygen, thank you, Rachel. And thanks, Living Lands and Waters, for all the great work that you do.
Great program.
When you have gone around on the river, so one of my favorite sayings, the college song for Augustana was stolen from Rock Island High School. It's called "By the Mighty Mississippi." And there was a chaplain who was here in the 20th century who said, you know, we've lived by the Mississippi long enough. Now we need to learn to live with the Mississippi. What has spending time living on a river taught you? How has it expanded your virtual horizons?
Yeah, gosh, like I was saying before, like growing up in Wisconsin, I feel like I was a lake girl, was always like, let's go to lake kayaking and boating and swimming and all that good stuff. And rivers, golly, they're the veins of America, right? Flowing water, they're beautiful if you're just looking out to them, but abundance of resources and just beauty behind them all. I mean, like I was saying before, rivers provide, you know, mighty Mississippi River provides 20 million people with their drinking water every single day, and wonderful animals that are utilizing it as their home. And just there's so much value in our rivers. Without rivers, I mean, ecological home, but economic engine as well. And just like I said, the veins of America that are really the heartbeat of what's keeping everything alive. It's America's back roads, is what we like to say. Rivers are really wonderful.
Well, but there's a downside, and I grew up just 10 blocks from the river, and a lot of my growing up was spent down in what's called Sylvan Island and this area around here. If there's a vulnerability, it's that rivers take things with them, right? Mm-hmm. And there's beauty to that, right? All rivers lead to the sea and yada, 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 yada. But we tend to, I think, be less careful with rivers. If you're living by a lake and you're constantly polluting it, you're living with that all the time.
Yeah.
And yet we have for generations dumped things into this river because, well, it's going to be somebody else's problem. Or so we can delude ourselves. Mm-hmm. How are you seeing in your educational mission ways that we can change that? That people have this regard for what's happening above us and what's happening below us.
Yeah, I think honestly, just taking a moment to even just look at a photo of all of the watersheds and the rivers that are leading to the spot that we are now. Like, man, it's so easy to get to forget, I guess, how it all leads to here in the Quad Cities, and then how it travels south down to St. Louis, and then to Memphis, Louisiana, and then into the Gulf, and then into the ocean, right? And just helping students, adults, kids, right, connect those dots and just saying, like, man, we are all really connected in this country in ways that we don't even realize, and we're connected through our waterways. And so it's wild to think that, what's happening upriver from here, whether it's on the Missouri, starting over in Montana, or on the Ohio River, starting from Pittsburgh, it's leading down to the mighty Mississippi River. And so while maybe not everybody can come and do a cleanup with us because we're down in Memphis, Tennessee, or in Louisville, doing a small part in your community, even if it's on land, it all matters. We just a few weeks ago, didn't we have like 50 mile per hour winds mm-hmm. out here in the Quad mm-hmm. Cities? And it's like, gosh, if you even just stood outside of your community, you're going to see trash blowing around.
Right.
Spring is coming. Who knows what this spring will come with flooding, you know, but it's just doing your part in the community to make sure, like I said before, like maybe you're not changing the world, but you're changing your world. And that's probably the most important thing, is taking a look at your backyard, quote unquote, right?
I don't want to catch you out of the blue with this one, but I am going to ask you in a minute some of the more interesting questions you've gotten from students,
okay.
Both in terms of the environmental side, but also the economic side that you've been talking about. But I got to tell you, I don't know, 10 plus years ago, I decided to finally ride the city of New Orleans, the train that goes down. And when we got to below Memphis and in northern Mississippi, it was shocking for me because, you know, rail lines are like rivers in their own right. And they don't always go through the prettiest parts of towns, mm-hmm. right? And I was stunned to be looking out and see these the ditches along the sides of the rail line, because you're in boggy, boggy country, that were 3, 4, and 5 feet deep in plastic bottles.
Oof.
I know. Oof. Ugh. How do you and the team, the crew, how do you keep that fire going when you work so hard and you clean a stretch and then you get to another stretch and it's like, oh,
yeah.
How do you keep your spirits up?
Yeah, I actually just had this question from a teacher that was at a workshop yesterday, so I'm glad you're asking. I mean, is it a hard job to look at garbage every day? Yes, absolutely, 100%. But to know, like we were just saying, you are making a difference, it's quite inspiring, right? And to see these high school students or a 50-year-old person or even a 70-year-old person come out, like, it's just allowing people to get this new perspective that maybe they never have before. It's not like we're saying, like, yeah, those third world countries, let's say. It's right in our community. So giving these people the experience, I mean, it's just, it's eye-opening. And of course, we got to make it fun, right? You got to keep people on their toes, and cleaning up garbage isn't the most fun job, but we're having fun. We're making it a competition.
Yeah.
If you find like a rubber ducky, that's pretty cool. But if you find a bowling ball, I mean, that's getting up there. And then messages in a bottle, like, you're the trash king or queen for the day if you find a message in a bottle, no doubt.
And you found some?
I found one. Gosh, where was it even?
Do you remember what it said?
Yeah, it had a lucky penny in it, a little 4th of July American flag, and a little note about 9/11, which is just wild.
Mm.
But Chad, he's got one of the largest, if not the largest, message in a bottle exhibit, you know, where I think we have over like 150
wow.
from just over the years.
Wow.
But so you're finding stuff. And so, like, yeah, it's just fun because anything you could think of, like, we found Ronald McDonald shoes, like, you know, a hot tub.
I was wondering
it doesn't seem
where those
like.
Went.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Like those creepy Ronald McDonald's figurines and
but you do, guys. You guys always make everything you do fun.
We're listening to music. We're having skits out there. We're just having a good time. Yeah.
And so you mentioned, and I want you to give us the website again for the Institute, But Living Lands and Waters, is that, do you have a trash tracker where you can like see how many cars, how many Ford Econoline vans, how many tires and everything else? So tell us again, the Institute website?
Yeah, My Classroom Barge, MississippiRiverInstitute.org, okay. And then LivingLandsAndWaters.org for all the general programming, Million Trees, River Cleanups, Adopt a River Mile program, general education. So yeah, go check it out. There's a lot to explore. Stat tracks, the history of Chad on there. History of Living Lands and Waters. There's a lot of cool stuff on the website for sure.
If you haven't figured out by now, friends, at WVIK, we love great stories and we love great storytellers. So this is that time every week when we step aside and pay tribute to one of the greatest storytellers of all time. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time once again for Rock Island Lines with Roald Tweet.
This is Roald Tweet on Rock Island. As a child, you learn that it's possible for a kingdom to be lost for want of a nail. Long ago near Rock Island, it worked the other way. Because of a small kindness, a city was built. It was 1832. Tensions between the Sauk Indians, who had lived at Saukanuck, where the Rock River meets the Mississippi, and the growing number of white settlers who wanted that land, had erupted into war the previous April. On August 2nd, that war had ended with the annihilation of almost half the Sauk Indians, men, women, and children, at the Battle of Bad Axe along the Mississippi in Wisconsin. The Indian leader, Black Hawk, was captured. The United States government sent General Winfield Scott to negotiate a treaty. On September 21, the Sauk Indians ceded all their lands in Illinois to the United States. Forced into these negotiations were two innocent parties. Along the Iowa shore across from Saukanuck were a tribe of Meskwaki Indians who had almost been annihilated earlier by the French and who had come to live under the protection of their Sauk relatives. Also on the Iowa side of the river lived a group of Sauk Indians under their chief Keokuk, who had remained friendly to the Americans in 1812, while Black Hawk's band had sided with the British. Regardless, the Black Hawk Treaty took a 50-mile deep strip along the Mississippi, almost the whole length of Iowa, away from these non-combatants, 6 million acres. The treaty gave Antoine LeClaire, an Indian interpreter living among the Meskwakis, a section of land at the head of the Rock Island Rapids. Keokuk and his band were left only a small reservation along the Des Moines River. Yet Keokuk personally insisted that a square mile of land around the treaty site itself be reserved for Antoine LeClaire's wife, Marguerite, for her many kindnesses toward the Indians in hard times. She had never turned them away hungry. The land the Indians gave to Marguerite LeClaire became Davenport, Iowa, a city that owes its beginnings to a few small acts of kindness flowering amid a weedy garden of betrayal and greed.
Rock Island Lines with Roald Tweet is underwritten by Augustana College, Rock Island, Illinois.
And fortunately, we get to hear those on WVIK because there is a WVIK. Friends, you might have heard this week that there's going to be more legal action about the rug that was pulled out from public broadcasting by the current administration. That's still in flux. And like most lawsuits, it's probably going to take a long time to figure it out. You can keep things like Rock Island Lines on the air. You can keep the conversation on WVIK and amazing stories like we're getting from Rachel Loomis at Living Lands and Waters. If you go to WVIK.org and up in that right corner, you see a little donate button, and that'll keep us going for now. We want to keep this conversation with Rachel Loomis going for now. On the subject of funding, I mean, you guys have done a great job in finding corporate partners, but how can average schmoes like me, how can we help the great work that Living Lands and Waters and the Mississippi River Institute are doing day in and day out?
Yeah. Wow. Gosh, thanks for asking that. yeah, it's overwhelming to know how much support, you know, we get from near and far and from local support and just people all over the country and just help and support us with our programs and our operations. Just being a 501c3 nonprofit, truly every dime counts. Mm-hmm. Like every penny counts, right? So if you go to our website and how to help and livinglandsandwaters.org, there's a tab where you can make a donation to us, and $20, $100, whatever you're willing to help contribute. Our educational workshops are free, making it a little bit more accessible. And that's because of wonderful donations, from, like I said, $5 to mm-hmm. whatever you got. So we support the help in any way you're willing to.
Well, and I love the fact that these are programs are offered to our area's young people through their schools free of charge. But I warned you before, yeah. Do you have any really good doozy questions that you've gotten from students that you've interacted with?
Yeah, well, like I was saying before, like, what's the craziest thing you've ever found is always the biggest one, right? Or like, have you found any bodies in the river is a crazy one too. So students always tend to keep you on your toes, for sure. But honestly, I feel like what's crazy these days? What's crazy yeah, these
right.
days?
Crazy is a shifting target.
Yeah, anymore. Yeah, right. Yeah. So, just fun interactions with students nonetheless. And honestly, sometimes it's not even the questions. More so, it's just seeing how the students walk away from the experience aboard our floating classroom barges and being able to connect with the Mississippi River in ways that they never have before.
What's your personal trophy? Some things that you've found that you are very proud of having found.
Yeah, so I have this on my mantle at my little rental house right now. So, you know, in Toy Story, those little like army soldier
yes,
figurines,
yes.
right? My first fun find, as I always say, my first fun find was a cowboy of one of those. And it's just like got a cowboy hat, bandana on. And, it's what I call a tchotchke.
Hey.
And so it's up on my mantle and it's looking like he's about to draw in the old Western days. Like he's about to go into this crazy scene with somebody. And so that's my little action figurine. It's a small one,
yeah,
but
yeah.
It travels with me everywhere. So that's my fun little one.
I love that.
Yeah, yeah.
So a few years back, we were able to rescue the spillway that creates Lake George in Loud Thunder, which, by the way, was named for Black Hawk's son, mm-hmm. but we didn't use his real, his Sauk name sounds so cool. It's Nas Askuk, but we called it Loud Thunder, right? But when we drained it out, they found a couple of like handguns that somebody, dumped or something. You kind of expect that in our country. What I thought was the most hilarious was the number of these little Danny Dinosaur fishing rods that you get for a kid. Cause I got one for my kid and she pulled in a beautiful fish on one once, but I could just make the story in my head, a frustrated parent, there's a snag and just let the thing, or a fish gets on and the child shocked lets it go. So we found a lot of those, on that subject. And I mentioned this before, but Chad and the organization really weighed in wonderfully when we were on the brink of getting about 180 acres of timberland that we could restore with red oak and pecan and walnut and all the black oak and all this kind of stuff. And he weighed in at a critical time. And what we did was we named it. We've got all these parks and things around here that are named for corruptions of the Sauk words, right? For instance, Illiniwek. Mm-hmm. No Sauk person ever used that word. Mm-hmm. In fact, no Peoria, Cahokia, none of these folks used it. It was a phrase that the Ojibwe attributed. They said that's how they called those people. So doggone it, I thought, if we're going to have a new park, we're going to give it a name in the Sauk language. And it was an interesting process. We wrote to the Sauk Nation in Oklahoma and asked permission. And so that's why the new park is called Amoa, which means bee, mm-hmm. because we're all about them pollinators. Yeah.
Sure are, yeah.
So, yeah. And I think, I don't know if you've had a chance to get out there, but you guys have done a great deal of helping us get it some good native hardwood species planted out there.
Yeah, yeah. I've only been out there once or twice. I got to get out there a little bit more. But yeah, planting some trees out there, helping with the pollinators, getting other plants out there that are just helping those native species thrive. And yeah, it's cool to be a part of it for sure and get mm-hmm. our hands on it. And I can only imagine that we're, we're always looking for volunteers to get out there. So there's got to be some events coming up, I'd imagine, with Earth Day. And
You guys do so much. Yeah. But you, the old headquarters or the current headquarters are closer to that area, but you're developing a new spot along the East Moline waterfront and what used to be industrial land, Beacon Harbor. Can you tell us anything about that, the timelines and the vision and all that?
Yeah. So that's exactly where the Mississippi River Institute floating classroom barge is parked, right on the river right there. And it's Beacon Harbor is right behind John Deere, essentially. And so we acquired this chunk of property a few years ago, and we're just reconstructing. I think it was like an old HOA building or something. And so we're turning that into our office. And so our kind of like main maintenance shop is on Highway 84, just right off of Highway 80. But we just decided to acquire this building because why not? It's right on the river, right? And so it's going to be our office space, and we're excited to be there. And hopefully in a few months, we'll be able to get in there and come on down and say hi.
Great opportunity for public events and all kinds of things like that. But then, and do friends go by and check out the classroom while it's still there, because as Rachel said, it's going to be leaving in the summer. I just want to ask you mechanically, as part of the crew, when you got to move this, what is that aspect of your job like? Because, you know, I mean, barge work is hard work.
Gosh, it's so funny because I'm like, I am a teacher. Like, I went for School of Natural Resources. What are you talking about? I got to be a deckhand, right? So, the floating classroom does not have a motor on it. It's just a flat steel barge that we craned a structure on, a 100-year-old building from the Ohio River. It was like 70,000 pounds, and it's a beautiful space. But navigating to a different part of the river, that's, you know, a part of the river that we got to take care of. And so when we're traveling to a next location, a lot of our sponsors actually help us out with that. And those sponsors are Marquette, Artco, these towboat companies, right? And so obviously there's a lot of logistics that go behind it to plan. And we're looking at river levels and we're seeing what towboat might be coming by. So we got to put our patient pants on a little bit. But what we do is those towboats come off and they tie off to our barge. And if they got 12 other barges that they're hauling, you know, up down river, we just tie off to them. And the best way I like to say it is we're kind of like hitchhikers on the river, right? Again, there's a lot of logistics that go behind that and people making it happen and funding making it happen. But we tie off to them and we just get to watch the river and flow down or go up the river with these towboat companies, with these other barges that are hauling different commerce and get to our next location.
Probably one of the most memorable vacations I ever had when I was a kid. I was in elementary school, and our family with another family that were friends, we rented a houseboat and just went, I think, from Lansing, Iowa, up to beyond maybe La Crosse, La Crescent, somewhere up in there, and watched our respective dads go at each other's throats when we had to lock through because they each had their own ideas of how to do that.
Uh-huh.
But what it really impresses upon you is that this is, as you said before, this is an artery. This carries life. This carries culture. This carries biology as well as anthropology everywhere it goes. Have you discovered new things that really sparked your curiosity or your imagination or passion in terms of new communities for a kid from Racine County?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I mean, I feel like I'm still learning stuff every single day out on these rivers. There's so much culture behind it. There's so much history behind the river. People come from different backgrounds and perspectives. And it's really cool because I feel like if you meet somebody on the river, you have this passion for the river. And that's a commonality that is really wonderful. And so, I'm learning so much out there about the jobs, about the culture, about history of the river. And so that's what I get to do for my job, is help inspire these students to get connected through these jobs as well. So it's so much fun. The commerce that's going up and down these riverways, everything from the corn to the road salt to the soybeans. I mean, one barge full of dry cargo is equivalent to 70 semi-trucks.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't even know what a barge is, right? So when we're going over those bridges, we're going over those bridges for a reason, not just for the water, but for these towboats that are pushing barges up and down these riverways as well.
That's one thing that if I look back and think about the history of it, that is, I don't know. I think it's bittersweet is that, yeah, now we just view the river as an impediment in places like the Quad Cities. I got to get over there. I got to do this. And oh no, this one's got construction and all that kind of stuff. But back when the W.J. Quinlan and other ferries were the primary way of getting back and forth and the riverfronts were bricks going down into the water, you had to, if you lived in a river town, you had to meet people from very different cultures. Mm-hmm. And of course, now we can stay very insulated and isolated and then just view the river, like I said, like an impediment. Mm-hmm. With all the things that you do working on and helping us appreciate deeply the river, do you guys also get a chance to play on the river?
Yeah, I mean, some of us will take kayaks out on the river at night or after a hard day of work. You know, sometimes after a long, hard workshop, what I do is I just bring my lawn chair up to the top deck of the Mississippi River Institute and bring my laptop up there to just debrief for the day while I'm still doing some work and look out to the sunset. And yeah, we're fishing out there every once in a while. We might take one of our John boats just to go discover a little slough up or down river. And yeah, I mean, if you're working on the river, you got to go play on it too a little
bit, right?
So, yeah.
Well, on Friday, the day before this show is airing, I had to attend a community meeting that was at the Hyatt, which is almost to the classroom, right? Mm-hmm. But to commute by bike, you get to be, again, by and with the river. And these friends, I mean, the white pelicans, when we see them come at, when I was a kid, the water quality was so poor, they didn't stop here. Mm. We didn't see them. Yeah. Now, all of my grandkids and my kids, their lives were spent welcoming the pelicans and watching them go away, as well as the eagles and everything else like that. But something changes when you're, I think, not just adjacent to a river, but appreciating it. How do you make sure that you can still appreciate it? You talked about decompressing on the top deck, but what other tricks do you have to make sure that you appreciate the river?
Yeah, that's a great question and probably something I need to do a little bit better on because, boy, sometimes, you know, you're just doing so much out there. But through my role as an educator, that's what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to inspire people. So I got to take that slice of advice and apply it to these students every day and make sure I'm applying it myself. And honestly, it's just opening your eyes and looking out to the, you know, my classroom, the barge window and discovering it and just sitting there for a moment and just observing what's all going on from industrial to nature to everything in between. So it's a... You know, it's just taking the time to make sure you're appreciating the resource that's right in your backyard, whether that's the mighty Mississippi River or a smaller creek or a little river, and just taking a little bit of time to do so.
Well, I want to thank you for taking the time to help us today, this morning, really begin to appreciate the river in ways that we don't often enough. So, unfortunately, we ran out of time, Rachel.
I feel like we could keep talking. Like, let's keep it.
You know what? You better watch out because that's how people get invited back on the show.
Twist my arm. Don't tell me with a good time.
There you go. Well, that's going to have to do it for this week. Once again, thanks to my guest, Rachel Loomis from Living Lands and Waters and specifically the Mississippi River Institute. You can find out more about those two organizations online. And remember, friends, you can catch the conversation twice each week on WVIK Saturday morning at 10 o'clock, right before Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, then the rebroadcast Monday evenings at 8, right after Fresh Air. You'll also find recent episodes at WVIK.org and just look for us under the podcast tab. Well, from the campus of Augustana College, this is Kai Swanson inviting you to join us next week for The Conversation on WVIK, when our guest will be Robin Johnson, the host of Heartland Politics, which you get to hear on WVIK. Well, let's find out more about who Robin Johnson is, and I hope you'll join us. Stay tuned. A little bit of news from NPR, then the programming continues on your public radio station, WVIK.
You've been listening to The Conversation on WVIK. If you missed part of the program or just want to hear it again, you can tune in Monday night at 8 o'clock. Thanks so much for listening.
Support for WVIK comes from Source Bookstore. offering thousands of used and out-of-print books in all genres, music, and movies. Open 7 days a week at 232 West 3rd Street in Davenport, serving the Quad Cities for 86 years. That's Source Bookstore.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Riley.
And WVIK is our NPR station.
It's the button you can set just for NPR News here in the Iowa, Illinois area. WVIK, 90.3 FM and HD Rock Island, along with 95.9 FM, K240 DZ Dubuque. WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.